Ukraine believes more firepower, including tanks, could be a game changer in the ongoing conflict. CNA's Atelier Edwards shows us some of the heavy weapons that are already on the ground and the other items on Ukraine's wish list.
Ukraine would have lost this war long ago without help from the West. You name it, the U.S. and its allies have sent it. But what are the heavy weapons that are really making a difference? Among them, these multiple launch rocket systems, or MLRS. It's an automated mobile weapon that can fire off surface-to-surface precision-guided missiles. In some cases, about a dozen in less than a minute. And the range can be about 80 kilometers, allowing the Ukrainians to hit Russian forces and equipment, but avoid being hit back. Now, the high-mobility artillery rocket system, or HIMARS, is in the same family as the MLRS. But a key difference is it's on wheels, not tracks. Manufacturer Lockheed Martin says it has a shoot-and-scoot capability, enabling users to position, engage, and rapidly relocate after firing. Now, that's the attack side. How about defense? A major addition to Ukrainian weaponry has been the U.S.-built Patriot missile system. It came into play recently because Russia ramped up missile and drone strikes on civilian infrastructure. Well, Patriots have a range of up to 100 kilometers. But Ukrainian soldiers need specialized training to use a sophisticated system. Plus, the missiles aren't cheap. One of them costs around $3 million. Soon, the Ukrainians will be using a U.S. Army staple known as the Bradley. Now, the tracked medium-armored vehicle has a 25-millimeter gun, and it can carry missiles known as tank killers. Well, France has pledged a similar armored vehicle to Ukraine, set to arrive by March. The AMX-10RC is highly mobile and fitted with a powerful gun. It's been used in the past for reconnaissance and fire support during fighting. Now, for non-military types, it's not always easy to see the difference between that stuff and tanks. But this is what Ukrainian generals really want: modern tanks to help turn the tide of this war, either break the stalemate with Russia or fend off an expected springtime offensive. This month, Britain upped the ante, becoming the first Western nation to announce it's sending some. 14 of the UK's main battle tank, the Challenger 2, will arrive in Ukraine in the coming weeks. Now, also on the wish list, these beasts, the Leopard 2 tank, considered a workhorse of many European armies. Now, their re-export requires German government approval, though, and leaders in Berlin have been reluctant, cautious about pushing the Russians too far and further escalating the war. But they are under pressure to relent. Poland is ready to send Leopard 2s to Ukraine. So is Finland. There are more than 2,300 of them available or in storage across Europe. They have overwhelming mobility and firepower, along with all-round protection. German manufacturer Rheinmetall says that the Leopard 2 can help an army break through enemy lines and end a long period of trench warfare. Some reports suggest Germany would greenlight sending the tanks if the U.S. made a similar move. A lot of talk has been swirling around the M1 Abrams main battle tanks, but U.S. defense officials say they're not currently prepared to offer them up. They describe it as a very complicated and expensive piece of equipment that's tough to train people how to use. Plus, it has high fuel demands due to its gas turbine propulsion system. Still, security analysts say wherever they come from, Ukraine needs tanks and lots of them to retake significant amounts of territory and maybe eventually drive the Russians back across the border.
Oh, let's discuss the supply of military weapons and that defense ministers meeting going on at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. Greg Kennedy is professor of strategic foreign policy at King's College London. Thanks so much for joining us, Professor Kennedy. Well, this NATO meeting that is going on right now, Lloyd Austin, U.S. minister, going into this, called this a decisive moment for Ukraine. Jens Stoltenberg calling this a pivotal moment. Now, explain for us why this is politically, militarily, such an inflection point for this war. And if tanks, as we keep hearing, are really the way to turn the tide of war in favor of Ukraine.
Good evening. Thank you. Yes, this is a pivotal moment, and that's why the attention is as high as it is at this point on two areas. One is in terms of the overall direction of the support to the Ukraine, and will that still remain under U.S. control and with U.S. needs and ideas about the peace and how that will work being dominant, or will that transition to another country or a group of countries such as the German perspective? And what I mean about that is, giving the kinds of weapons that are being asked for in terms of particularly the main battle tanks does give the Ukraine certainly a larger amount of defensive firepower. But it also gives them an awful lot of offensive firepower as well. And that if they are successful, will probably extend the war in terms of creating the idea that they could retake the Donbass area and perhaps even the Crimea. Now, that, as opposed to the idea that a stalemate may be in the offing and that peace talks could be created and maybe brought into play by the spring if a good defensive bleeds the Russians to the negotiating table, it is not a good thing, particularly for world economies.
Oh, pardon me for cutting in like this. So in other words, it might actually be in the interest of the US and its allies to push for continued attrition, low-level attrition, so that neither side really loses, but neither side also really wins.
Exactly. So if you think about the idea of getting the world's economies back into play, which most countries are looking for after COVID and after the impact of the war on them, the faster they get a peace into place, then the faster those economies begin to revive. Now, that's the economic perspective. If you go on the humanitarian democracy side, then, of course, you are more inclined to want to support the Ukrainian efforts to liberate all their territories, to definitely deal a decisive blow against Russia in Europe. And that's where a lot of the other partners, particularly the Polish and Finns at this time and other NATO partners, would like to see this go. I think the Germans have legitimate concerns over what the repercussions for them long-term could be, particularly as they haven't been able to reorient themselves energy-wise as quickly as they would away from Russia. But also the idea of German tanks and German equipment in the Ukraine lending itself to the Putin narrative that the Ukrainians were just another breed of Nazis that had to be eliminated. So there are problems there.
Well, the argument on not provoking Moscow, which, as you mentioned, is a real German concern, also a concern in Washington as well, not to cross the red line, as it were, and lend strength to Vladimir Putin's narrative. So giving long-range missile weapons, giving modern tanks such as Leopard or Abrams, that would be crossing the red line. The argument, of course, is that that red line has already been crossed with light armored weapons, with HIMARS as an example. So this red line is not something that Washington and its allies need to take seriously anymore. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, technology and equipment have different levels, different red lines in the escalation ladder, particularly with conventional arms like this. So you see a lot of the discussion is around air defense. It's being able to counter the Russian missiles and drones and be able to put a bubble over the Ukraine to help to establish some kind of security for it to be able to rebuild itself and to get its power stations and economy back online. Tanks are a different thing, particularly in the Russian psyche. The tank is a very offensive weapon. And if you think back over particularly the Second World War and the place of armored units, these are the things that crushed the Nazis and exploited and then took the fight all the way to Berlin. So the idea of tanks and giving the Ukrainians tanks sends a different message into the Russian perspective on this kind of capability.
And a final question, Professor. Pardon me for cutting, Professor Kennedy. We're trying to squeeze in the last question here. Finally, a possible outcome from this meeting. Is it possible that they might agree to some tanks, some Leopards, some long-range missile weapons, and on the understanding from Ukraine's side, assuming there is enough trust that Ukraine will not send rockets into Crimea or not send rockets into within Russian borders? Is that at all a possible outcome?
It's possible, but I don't believe that it's that likely. I think that the Germans will be very reluctant, and it'd be a very disastrous move of the Polish and the Finns then violated this kind of idea of unity by unilaterally giving the Leopards over. So, and I don't think the Americans are going to be willing to move on the Abrams issue. They're going to give the other technologies and say that's their leadership role.
Thanks so much for joining us and for all that input. Greg Kennedy, Professor of Strategic Foreign Policy at King's College London. Thank you.